Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition podcast, a podcast focused on training for endurance activity. I'm Sarah, a registered dietitian and toddler mom in the Washington, D.C. area. I write the blog Bucket List Tummy and focus most of my work on running and endurance athletes, as well as merging the principles of sports nutrition with the principles of intuitive eating.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and fellow toddler mom in Pensacola, Florida. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help athletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad to have you here and would appreciate you spreading the word or sharing this episode or podcast with a friend, family member, training partner, coworker, or anyone you would think would enjoy it. If you have a minute, please leave us a review wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as that really helps the show. Now let's get to today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by our Nail Your Nutrition self-paced fueling course. Whether you're a new or seasoned athlete, the Nail Your Nutrition course offers all of the information needed to prepare you, fuel you, and help you recover from endurance activity. The Nail Your Nutrition course has modules on macronutrient distribution, hydration and electrolytes, endurance needs for female athletes, vegans and vegetarians, nutrients of concern, supplements, tips for triathletes and endurance, ultra endurance runners, tips for relative energy deficiency, and more. We also include case studies to tie everything together, as well as videos and downloadable handouts. Plus, you have lifetime access to the course. That's right, you have access forever with updated scientific sports nutrition guidelines, practical tips for how to implement them, and you also have access to a private community where you can collaborate with other course members. To join the course and get started today, head to nailyournutrition.podia.com. That's nailyournutrition.podia.com, or head to the link in the show notes. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. Sarah, how are you today?
Marita, doing well over here. How are you?
Good, not much new. Just doing a lot of walking lately. I feel like a really poor endurance athlete lately. No swimming, biking, running. Just doing a lot of bar and strength training in the last couple of weeks of this pregnancy, which feels weird, but...
Yeah, in the final stretch, I was the same way. Honestly, I was just mostly walking, maybe like a little bit light strength training, but you're listening to your body. So that's
true. That's true. I know. It just feels strange. My husband's like, I'm going to go for a run. I'm like, oh, hi. Okay. Have fun. Mm-hmm. Wish I could go.
I know. I'm still not fully back to running. So, and when did I stop running? Like 28 weeks, 30 weeks pregnancy. So yeah. It's still been like a long time for me too, to like go out for a normal 30-minute run without stopping. So,
right.
Baby steps, just telling myself that in the long run, I'm making the right choices for my body.
You're doing walk run, right? Is that what you're doing?
I'm doing intervals, yeah. And I can't wait to pick our pelvic floor PT's brain on this when we interview her. Abby, got some questions for you.
Yeah. We have some really good guests lined up for you guys. We're really excited personally to hear those too, not just to share. But yeah, those walk run intervals, they're good and bad because you want to keep going, but you know you shouldn't.
Yeah. So. And I don't want to, like, I really want to make sure I'm not overcompensating or adjusting my pace or my, not my pace, my form, because I'm like scared that I'm doing it wrong. So am I making altercations that I shouldn't be making?
Yep.
Anyway, I know a lot of the moms out there can probably relate. Things just change after you have kids.
Yeah, it's so much to think about. And we didn't really have to do that before when we'd just be like, oh, I'm going to go train for a 5K. Let me just go out and run and everything will be fine. But can't really do that now. So we're excited for today's episode. Before we dive in, let's read our latest review. Sarah, you want to read it?
Yes. So this is a listener from Charlotte. Charlotte in the house, my old stomping grounds. Highly recommend for every endurance athlete. I love this podcast. Sarah and Marita bring a scientific understanding to real life topics in a way that is so accessible and easy to listen to. Their guests and episode topics will keep you coming back for more. Thank you, listener from Charlotte. We appreciate those words.
We really do. And again, if you are inclined to leave a review. We so appreciate it. It really is kind of like the fuel for us to keep going in our podcasting. We both get so excited when we have a new one. And we also raffle off our reviews monthly, and you get a free 30-minute phone call with one of us to discuss all things nutrition. No pressure, really chill. It's just to talk about whatever you want as a thank you to our listeners. So be sure to leave a typed review. Stars are also good, but typed review for the free 30-minute phone call.
Absolutely. And for today's episode, I sort of get to interview Marita a little bit because she is our triathlon expert. Today, we're just going to talk a little bit. We realize that we've done a lot of endurance episodes focused on running, but we also have triathletes as clients. We appeal to triathletes in our course. So we wanted to put a more specific episode out there for all you triathletes or wannabe triathletes. And we're sort of going to break down how to start, how to fuel, what you need, all of that good stuff.
Right. Triathlon 101. First, we should say that we are not personal trainers. And I am not a USAT triathlon coach on any level. So this is just my experience, what I've learned over the last 10 plus years of doing triathlons, just how I adapted and started from literally the bottom and have been chipping away at it for the last 10 years. So we're excited to get going. You're going to be hearing my voice a lot today, so I hope that's okay, guys.
All right, Marita. Well, yeah, let's talk. I think a good way to start is talk to us about your first triathlon. So what made you want to try that? Was it love at first sight? And I'm sure you'll get to how things changed over time between preparing for your first and subsequent triathlons, but talk to us about that first.
Yeah. So I should preface by saying that I was not an athlete in high school. I didn't do any sports except for one season of cross country. And the only race I did, I came in dead last. So I do not have a very strong athletic background. I did run and, you know, like go to the gym with my friends in college, but I definitely got more into running my senior year of college. And my husband had graduated from college and he's in the Air Force. So he came down here to Pensacola right after he graduated in 2009. And he was living in Pensacola and I was in Seattle still. And really short story. We eloped and then I moved down to Pensacola. So thank you, military.
I want to hear about that another time over wine.
Yeah. So I already knew before I graduated from college that I was going to be moving down to Pensacola to be with him. I had never lived on the coast or near the water. I'm originally from Albuquerque, New Mexico, so not used to living near the ocean. And I decided to get over my fear of water, which has been lifelong and really irrational and just not my favorite, was to train for a triathlon because Florida is really popular with triathletes for good reason. You have the ocean right there. It's pretty flat for running and biking. And there's a lot of really good triathlon support and groups. So I decided to take this on in 2010. I started training. I got a bike and I started to try and swim. And I couldn't even swim one lap. I had to like walk it in the last half really bad. And it's so funny that now where we live back here again, I go and swim there and it always makes me chuckle like, oh, I used to not even be able to do one lap and now I can swim over a mile. And it was just a huge learning curve. Like I have no idea what I'm doing. Nobody around me knew had done triathlons. My husband had not done a triathlon. He loves to bike. So he helped me with that a lot. Because sure you can get on a bike and ride it, but there's a lot of nuances with triathlons and road cycling and all of that. The only thing I had going for me was that I had still been running. So that was fine. That was super easy. And I pretty much just looked up a training plan online. And I think I did everything about two times a week. So I swam twice a week, biked twice a week. I probably ran more than twice a week just because it's my favorite leg. And maybe some light strength training in there. Probably not at that age, but you never know. And we did the Santa Rosa Island Triathlon, which is an amazing race here in Pensacola. Highly recommend it. It's very well supported. It's put on so, so well. And I convinced my husband to do it with me. And I got so scared jumping in before we were about to jump into the ocean. One, because the flag was purple.
So I'm like, it's either jellyfish or sharks. And they didn't move us into the bay, so I was freaking out.
Wait, what does a purple flag mean?
Oh, so on the beach where they have the different colored flags. Sorry, I should have
remembered. Oh, okay. Is this a triathlon specific thing or just a beach?
At least beaches in Florida. I'm not like, we don't go to a lot of beaches.
You guys might already know that, but yeah.
So a purple flag means there's marine life and to be cautious and maybe not go in the water. So it's usually either like jellyfish or sharks, which is my like main fear of water. Mm-hmm. So I'm like freaking out. We're about to start. And I convinced my husband to stay with me the whole time. So as soon as we get in the water, I lose him. Of course, and there's a jellyfish in my face. It was horrible, and I was like, oh no, I cannot believe this. How am I going to get through this? So everybody gets stung. Nobody has their face in the water because they're trying to avoid all the jellyfish. So I'm basically like doggy paddling in the Gulf of Mexico for 500 meters, and it was not fun. I did wait for my husband because I outswam him, which is shocking. But I waited for him for, I don't know, maybe like 5 minutes. He finally comes up. He gets his stuff together. He gets on the bike and he's like, see ya. He still cannot live that down. But he did win. He did beat me at this race because I waited for him. And he says it's his one and done and he's retired since he won. So don't let that sway you from not doing that race, though. It's an amazing race. I wish I could have done it in our time living here, but the timing never worked out with having a baby.
Okay, so that was your first triathlon. So were you hooked after that? Did you want to do more? Did you kind of know you had weaknesses to address in future races?
I think that I knew I needed to get more comfortable swimming in the open water, especially the ocean, because I was so panicked and so nervous. And I feel like I've only just now started to get over that. Maybe not with the ocean, just because the ocean is so unpredictable. And you really do feel like you're out there on your own, even though you're with a group of people and there's kayakers and paddleboarders and surfers around you that you can stop and hold on. So I think I knew like, ooh, I don't really want to do another ocean one, but I'll try another one. But yeah, that was my first real race like ever of doing any kind of athletic endeavor, and probably not what I would recommend at first for your first race. Definitely start with a sprint though with triathlon, but I would do a 5K first or like a bike race. But yeah, we moved to Georgia after that and we kept biking and I kept running. I don't love to swim. I like it a lot more now. So I kind of put that to the wayside for a little bit because I didn't feel like I had to. And then I convinced some new friends in Georgia to do triathlons. So we did a couple more sprints. I would say maybe like 5 or so, along with some half marathons. And then, and 10Ks and 5Ks. So I like branched out a little bit in the running world. And then I signed up for Ironman Augusta 70.3 in September 2016. But yeah, I would always come like in fourth or fifth, like pretty close. And so it's like, yeah, I think I could get a little better and maybe just try to hone that skill. The one thing that I feel like was really hard was I had a bike that was too big for me and I didn't know that. So biking was miserable. It's like, I don't know how this is so hard. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. All my friends were way faster than me on the bike. And I'm like, why is this so hard? Like I can run way faster and be fine. Like this isn't translating at all. So we can talk about that a little bit later, like picking out a bike. But that was probably the biggest thing that changed in my training was I got an actual bike fit and bike. And it was a world of a difference. So in that time, I had done 3 half marathons and like dozens of local 10Ks and 5Ks and 15Ks. And then I was like, you know what? I really want to do an Ironman. Augusta was about 3.5 hours away from us. And it's a downriver swim. So super easy. So I was like, oh, this is great. I will definitely do that. Hilly bike, flat run, doable.
Okay. And you had been, like you said, you were racing, you were doing half marathons. So you were kind of honing in on the running part too.
Right. Exactly. I had been coming off an injury. I have like a chronic knee. If I don't strengthen my hips and my glutes, my right knee acts up. So, and I had finally figured that out. And I was like, you know, I really want to do this before we have kids. I was in a good point with school. I was doing my master's and just taking a couple classes at a time. So it wasn't super intense. My husband wasn't going to be deployed because you really want to have someone with you on the course and to help you and to drop off your bike. So the timing worked out super duper well. I trained for 9 months for that race, starting in January 2016. And I feel like that is a lot. When you're just training for a sprint and maybe doing like some running races in there, it's much more manageable. When you jump up to those bigger distances, you have to do everything usually 9 times a week. So, or you're doing at least some kind of event 9 times a week.
So 9 exercise sessions a week?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So with sprints, you can get away with 2. So you're swimming twice, biking twice, running twice, and maybe throwing in a brick, which is a bike and a run right after, because that's the order of the triathlon. It's swim, bike, run. But with anything that's longer, you pretty much have to bump it up to 3 or more.
Interesting. Now, you might talk about this, but going in, if someone knows that they're weaker in a certain area, would you recommend they spend more time training or do more exercise sessions, for example, with the swim or the bike?
That's such a good question. I think for most people, they come in and they know that swimming is their weakest sport. And that was definitely me also. But the gains you can get from swimming is not significant. Whereas with running and biking, it is. So if you think like, okay, I probably averaged like 220 per 100 yards for swimming. And then when I was training for Augusta, it was probably like, I got down to like 145, 150, which is a significant only because I had no idea what I was doing. And I joined a master's group. And that helped tremendously. Whereas if you're biking with my old bike, not knowing what I was doing, I would average like 15 miles per hour. And now I can average 20 plus miles per hour. That's a way bigger time chunk that you're taking off. So I wouldn't say you want to swim mm-hmm. 5 times a week and not waste that time, but devote that time. That's something to do for the off season.
Right. Okay.
For sure.
Good to know.
Yeah. But if you're terrified of swimming and being in the water, that's definitely something you want to focus on.
So for you, what kind of helped your swimming? How did you kind of practice that?
So I knew that I needed to join a master's group. And that's definitely what I would recommend for anyone wanting to become a better swimmer. So I would get up at 5:45 Monday, Wednesday, Friday and swim. And I did that for 9 months. And that was really the key for me to just feel more comfortable in the water and not be so nervous the whole time. We had a coach, we did drills, we did a lot of intervals, and it just helped me not be so scared of the water, for sure. And then I had someone look at my form, and that helped tremendously. So I would recommend joining a master swim group.
Great. And now, is that a free option, or is it paid at like a local YMCA or something like that?
Right. Our local YMCA here in Pensacola, it's like an extra $20 a month. In Georgia, where I lived, it was $30 a month, which is a steal. I think in bigger cities, it would probably be a lot more. Yeah. Triathlon is not cheap. Oh my gosh. All of the things you have to think about. Yeah. That's why it's such an elitist sport. It's expensive. And it's something that most people get into later in life too, because they have that expendable income. Yeah. So for my 70.3, I followed an Olympic distance plan until May, and I'll talk about that in a second, like what that distance actually is. So about 5 months out from the race, I was swimming 3 times a week, running 3 times a week, just again because it's my favorite, and biking twice a week. And then I just bumped that up to 3 times a week for each sport, or more if doing a brick. So for instance, my long bike ride would be on Saturday, and then sometimes I would tack on a couple miles after that, like right after, to get those legs used to that, and then still do a long run the next day.
Kind of like we talked about with Courtney, that is it, this idea of cumulative fatigue, just teaching your legs, since that's the last leg of the triathlon, to work when they're tired and fatigued.
I know. I can't remember the last time I just trained for a running race, not coming off of like also a triathlon. And I'm very used to that cumulative fatigue now, not so much because I haven't trained for anything in a while, but it's like funny to me, that thought of having like fresh legs for your long run. Like, that's not anything I'm used to with triathlon training, just because you're so used to biking 30 plus miles the day before. In order to train for Augusta, I did an Olympic distance race, and that was the first time I'd ever placed in my age group in triathlon, so that was super exciting. I did the Fall Creek Falls Triathlon in Tennessee. I highly, highly recommend that. I also did it in 2019, and that was my first postpartum race, and it's a lake swim, not too hilly bike. It is a bit of a hilly run, though, which they don't really advertise, but it's an awesome, if you're in the Tennessee or southern area, highly recommend it. When I did Augusta, it was unfortunately super duper hot, and it was the first year that it was not wetsuit legal, which means you cannot wear your wetsuit and have your time be counted for age group awards, or you can wear your wetsuit and be the last group to go. So you start your day at like 10.
Why is that?
So they don't want to give you like an unfair advantage.
So they don't want some people wearing a wetsuit and some not?
Okay. Right, because the water temperature was too hot. So if I wanted to wear my wetsuit, I would have had to have foregone my group, which I think left at like, I don't know, probably 7:38. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't leave with my age group and start that much sooner when it was already going to be a super hot day. And I was kind of mentally relying on that wetsuit because it does make you faster. It makes you more buoyant. I always have trouble saying that word. And it's just kind of like a safety thing. Like you just feel so much more at ease in it. So I did not do that. I left my wetsuit there. I still have yet to actually wear it for a race, which is funny. But we can talk about wetsuits in a little bit. The real fill temp was 106 degrees when I was running. It was not fun.
So what were you wearing then? Let's talk that for people. Like, I'm assuming you had a visor.
Yeah, visor, sunglasses, and my tri suit. I went for the two piece because I knew I would have to pee a couple times. But since then, I've leaned more towards one pieces because it does make you faster. We'll talk about that when we talk about like gear and stuff. But you definitely want to have a triathlon suit. You don't want to be wearing like shorts and a t-shirt. That would be not
fun. Yeah, I guess that would make sense that you just keep it on, right? The less changing you have to do, the better.
Yeah, you wear the same thing the whole time. I've done triathlons where you can swim in the pool. So then I would wear like my bike shorts and a like swimming, not bikini top, but like a actual like swimming laps top. And that's fine. Some people will just do a triathlon in their swimsuit and then throw bike shorts on. Some people do that too. I'm not super comfortable. I think I would need more support up top than that. So that wouldn't like really jive for me. That wouldn't feel good running. And it's funny, that was my first like Ironman branded race. And I was so intimidated by all the cool triathlon bikes and everyone looking super professional and with their group and training. And I'm like, what am I doing here? This is not going to go well. I had a goal to go sub 6 and I did it in 6:03. And I had a miserable half marathon because I took Gatorade at mile 40 after blowing through my liquids because it was so hot. And I had not trained with Gatorade. And it made me feel awful. And I still, to this day, will never drink orange Gatorade ever again. So I felt like throwing up the whole rest of the time. And I was like crushing the race up until that point. So just a little plug, train with what is either on the course or have backup fluid. That's what I always tell my clients.
Yeah, very important. So what did you do aside from Gatorade? What did you do for carbs?
I did scratch fluid. And then I did like a lot of Stroop waffles. I did a lot of the Trader Joe's, like those fish ones, like the Swedish fish Trader Joe's knockoff. I did those. I did a couple gels. And the bike is pretty much just like a buffet. Like that's where you get the majority of your calories.
That was what I was going to ask. Like logistically speaking, that's where it's probably easiest to take the fuel.
Because you're not jostling around. So you pretty much just eat the whole time. And I only had two bottles and that was gone. And so when you do a bottle swap, they throw it at you, which is super intimidating. And then you have to like catch it. You can slow down and probably pull off to the side. But with everyone else, it's...
Who's they? Like just the water table attendant or your support group?
Yeah, like the aid station. So they'll throw you a water bottle or they'll throw you like a Gatorade bottle because that's what is Ironman sponsored.
Okay.
Gatorade. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I'll just take a Gatorade and then I don't have to stop, which I'll never do again. Just stop. Don't, like, those extra 2 seconds. Yeah. But yeah, you're pretty much eating the whole time. during that bike.
Okay, so that's something for people who want to try triathlon. That's obviously you're going to guess what we're going to say, but that's what you want to practice with. Practice eating on the bike in different weather conditions, different terrains, all of that practice.
And for me too, I mostly trained on my trainer on weekdays on my bike. So I have to stimulate that too. Even though it's not as hot inside, I knew that it was going to be a hot race. So even if I didn't want to have that extra fluid, I needed to think about that. And then I would do my weekend long rides, usually outside with my husband or with a bike group.
And for training purposes, like you mentioned, with the master's group, you did like some intervals and workouts. Is it the same with cycling? Like, are you including some interval sprints in there to kind of work on speed? One or two? Well, if you're only doing a couple rides a week, what does that look like?
Yeah, such a good question. So I would have one day a week where I would do like an interval bike ride. And then the other two would be maybe like a chunk of a tempo in the middle or just a long bike ride, just trying to get those miles in. And it's funny, I would just kind of like zone out and watch Netflix and not really think about it as much. Like it was just getting the miles in. And I don't do that now. Totally. I definitely do more intervals and tempos and different stuff with biking. And that has made me a lot faster.
Okay. So recap your schedule for us. So obviously everyone's going to have a little bit different schedule based on timing, lifestyle, their preference for each sport, their strengths, their weaknesses. But what did yours look like when you were training for that half Ironman?
Yeah, and I want to preface by saying this was pre-child, pre-kids. So I had a lot more free time.
Big important distinction.
Yeah. So my schedule was Mondays I would swim in the morning and then run in the afternoon, like after work. And again, that's wanting to race and you know your race is going to be – you know you're going to be running your race in the afternoon. So you should be running when it's hot. And Tuesdays I would do a bike ride, usually after work. And a strength training, something at least for like 30 to 45 minutes. Wednesday, I would swim again in the morning, run in the afternoon. Thursday, again, bike and strength. Friday, swim, because there was really no other way I could get that in with the master's group. And then Sunday, I would do a long bike or brick. And a brick, again, is a bike and a run right next to each other. And then Sunday long run and core. So notice I don't have any days off there.
So my question, like, is there accumulating soreness here? I know you probably did some foam rolling, but what if you did need an off day? Or you should have taken one, I'm assuming. Yeah.
I would almost always take it. Right. It's just, it was really hard with the Monday, Wednesday, Friday swimming. You're supposed to do swimming with biking. But that just wasn't feasible with my master's group. They only had Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So if I was really tired, then I would just shuffle stuff around. Like maybe I would do like Friday, I would swim and bike and just be super tired for that long bike and run. Or do like a mini brick on Mondays or something like that. But yeah, there were definitely some weeks where I was like, I haven't taken a true off day. I would usually take that Friday swim really super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not something I recommend. You almost always need one complete off day. It was just that the schedule did not work. Now I don't think I would be able to do it just because I'm older and I know that you need that mentally, that full day off.
Well, also in regards to the schedule, so you mentioned this was pre-kids. What were you doing for work? Was that like a 9-to-5 work day? What did that look like?
Yeah, I worked on base. I was the base dietitian. So
okay. You were super busy.
Yeah. So sometimes I would go like literally during my lunch and run and it would be 100 plus degrees. And then sometimes I would even do like three workouts, like maybe I Monday swim, run in the afternoon and then bike in the evening. But yeah, it was a typical 9-to-5 job.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good to know. It actually does seem like at least the clients I've had who do long marathon running or triathlon training, they like to be busy. So they're used to this, like they're lawyers or they're healthcare workers, and they're used to just switching their mind from work to exercise and having everything stacked up against each other. So I don't know. It might just be like a time management thing that athletes learn to fit it all in.
I know. I guess you could always like swim in the morning. And then if you have, you know, you have a flexible work schedule and then do a quick bike. I mean, it's definitely flexible and you can always plug it in, and you don't necessarily need a coach. You can just buy a plan and plug it in yourself. That's what I did. So, and I foam rolled and stretched every night.
I'm sure that's important just because you're working pretty much all of your muscles. It sounds like all of your muscle groups.
Yeah. My arms and back have never been stronger. Maybe except for carrying around my like 1-year-old last year. I was like, oh, look, I actually have arm muscles here. But no, it's crazy. It's you're just constantly sore all over and you just plow through. You just keep going.
Okay. So we've talked about a lot of different terms like sprint, triathlon, Olympic distance. So break down the different distances for our followers.
Okay, so a sprint is about anywhere between 300 to 750 yard swim. I've done as low as like a 250 swim in the Music City Triathlon in Nashville. Like it was like a minute. It was so quick. It really just depends on the location of the race and the race director. And then anywhere between a 12 and 18 mile bike. And it's almost always a 5K. That's usually the one thing that remains consistent. Training is typically 10 to 12 weeks. And then an Olympic is a 1,500-yard swim, which is just under a mile, a 25 to 26-mile bike, and then a 10K. And that training is typically 14 to 16 weeks. And then a 70.3, and that doesn't have to necessarily be Ironman. Ironman is just the brand, but you can definitely find local small 70.3s, and full Ironmans are really hard to find, but you can definitely find half Ironmans. That's a 1.2-mile swim, a 56-mile bike, and then a half marathon. Training is typically 16 to 20 weeks. And then a 140.6, that's a full Ironman, 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and then a full marathon. And then training is typically 20 to 24 weeks.
Yeah, I'm just...
Yeah, it's a lot.
Physically exhausted thinking about training for a full.
Yeah, I would really like to do one before I turn 40, like after I'm done having kids, but I don't know how people do it. I don't know how people manage with little kids. I could see if your kids were in elementary school or preschool a couple days a week, but
I mean, it's just, I think you're sacrificing a ton of time. So either you have a great support system in place, a supportive partner, a really flexible job, a good childcare provider, right? Yeah. There's a lot of things that would be in place.
Yeah, I mean, your longest bike for that full Ironman is 6 hours on a Saturday. So think about that. That's a, and it's not just like 6 hours, you're done. It's got to get my bike ready. Got to get, make sure I have my fuel. Got to get all my gear on. And then I have to shower and stretch and eat. You know, it's usually like at least 7 hours total.
Yeah. Yeah. When you put it that way, there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yep.
So I'm kind of curious, before we talk about exactly what someone would need to get started. And when you mention it that way, Marita, there, it does seem very overwhelming because there's a lot of moving parts here. That brings me to a question about transitioning from swim to bike to run. How do you do that? I mean, is that something you practice? Do you, you mentioned you're not changing outfits, but obviously you have to put shoes on. Do you wear different shoes for the bike and for the run? And what does that look like?
Yeah. So for the water, so you're getting out of the water and you're obviously soaked. It depends on the race. It depends on like how nice the race is and then how long the race is. If you're doing like a half Ironman plus and you're wearing a wetsuit, they have wetsuit strippers. So they help you pull your wetsuit off, which is super nice. And then, yes, you essentially run or walk to your bike, your transition area. And those are all racked based off of your age and your age group. So you're with your other age group people on your rack. Okay. So you have like, oh my gosh, maybe like 3 feet of space for your bike and all your stuff. We can talk about later like how I set it all up so that it's all in one and it's super easy. But the transitions are free time because it still counts, but you're not doing something physical. You're just getting ready. So you want those to be as fast as possible. I remember for Augusta, one of my transitions was like 13 minutes long because I think it was from the bike to the run because I felt terrible. And then I was like, I need to pee. Oh, I'm going to get some sunscreen. Oh, I'm just going to take my time and just take a breather. Like that's 13 minutes. That's way too long. So I definitely would recommend trying to practice those, especially for those bricks. So you come back from your bike ride, you take off your biking shoes, your helmet, you put on your running shoes, your visor, you go. That's it. You want to mimic that that transition. But yeah, it's intimidating. I remember for my Pensacola race, the first one, I tried to put a balloon up to where my transition was so that I knew where it was. And they were like, no, that's not allowed. Dang, I read that was a good tip, but I guess not. But because you get lost, I've definitely like forgotten where my bike is several times.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see me mentally just thinking about that at the swim and stressing out about the transition.
Yeah, you definitely want to replay that in your head. And maybe that's a good like distraction piece for the swim. It's like, okay, what am I doing next? I'm going to get out of the water. I'm going to catch my breath. I'm going to start running to transition or speed walking. And then I'm going to grab my helmet, grab my sunglasses, grab my socks and my shoes, you know, like that's something to focus on just to kind of walk you through it mentally.
Yeah. Okay. So you've mentioned a lot of pieces of equipment. Now, is there a list or something you can kind of review to just tell listeners what they would actually need to get started?
Let's take a short break and talk about Patreon. If you want to support the podcast, we started a Patreon account with different levels of support to choose from, with tons of freebies, discount codes, and more. The lower tier is just $3 a month, less than your daily latte order. Sarah and I pour so much into this podcast and want to continue to provide you guys with the best. Head to patreon.com/nailyournutrition or check out the show notes to support us. We so appreciate it. All right, let's get back to this episode. Yeah, so I'm going to tell you what you need, you actually need, and then I'm going to tell you what's nice to have. That would be super helpful. What you need to get started, like what you actually need have to have, not just what would be nice to have. A bike that fits. Like I said, do not pull what I did and just get a bike that looks pretty and is kind of cheap, right? Go to the bike store, get measured. Even if you don't get a bike fit, which is where it's like at least an hour long process and they watch you bike and then they make little adjustments, at least get measured so you know. So you don't buy a used bike without getting a bike measurement and knowing like exactly what size you need. It's really, really tempting to buy a used bike that you find on like Facebook Marketplace and you're like, oh man, this is so pretty and it's cheap and it's a good bike. I don't really know if it's going to fit me, but that's okay. Like, do not do that. Know what your size is.
Same with running shoes. You want good running shoes. Yeah, to just feel good, not get injured.
It really does make a difference. Like, I could barely bike and then I got a bike like that actually fit me. It was night and day. Like, it was embarrassing. Like, why? Because you're stretched. I was like way stretched over because it was too big and it just was not, my lungs were not functioning.
Yeah, and probably not good for your body or your posture or your physique or anything. Yeah.
Exactly. Get a quality helmet. And if you crash, get a new one. Because once you crash and you hit your head, that helmet is done. So don't think that you can skimp on that. I like the Giro, I think that's how you say it, brand. That's usually what I get just from REI. If you do buy a bike from a triathlon or bike store, usually they can throw in a bike fit. So ask them, or they give you a discount. So that's a nice perk if you are going to buy a brand new bike. Make sure you have a bike flat kit. So an extra tube, a hand pump, tire levers, and CO2 cartridges. And then have a little bag for that kit for the back of your bike. Good goggles. Don't skimp on this because you're going to be spending a lot of time in the pool. I really like the Speedo Vanquisher 2.0 or Roka's goggles. Those are good. And then a good quality swim cap, especially if you color your hair. Don't skimp on this. You can always do two, but I splurged and got a nice one when I started training for Augusta, and I still use it. I think it was like $20. And then a pro tip, rinse your hair with water before swimming. So get it wet. That coats the hair, especially if you color it or if you just don't want it to get dry. That's my hairstylist told me that a while ago. I really enjoy swimming earplugs. I don't like when a bunch of water gets in your ear and then you're dealing with it the rest of the day. And I would say at least two swimsuits because they take forever to dry. And you don't always want to use, like if your gym locker room has one of those like quick dryers, those tend to like pill.
Yeah.
Those swimsuits. So I recommend having two. Plus you want like different fits. Like we mentioned earlier, a triathlon suit or a two-piece. The suit makes you faster and it's supposed to be tight. You get it and you're like, this is not going to fit over my leg, but it does. It's supposed to be tight so that it doesn't create drag on the bike and in the swim. I really like the brand Smash Vest Queen or Betty Designs. And then like Sarah said, good running shoes. You probably want two pairs to alternate since you do run back-to-back days sometimes. Another thing is a solid training plan that can accommodate your schedule. It's really hard. Just move things around. If you don't get three, you know, get to the disciplines each three times each week, it's okay. It'll be all right. You will survive. You will finish your race. I remember before my Olympic in 2019, I didn't get to do a 2-hour long bike ride, which is kind of the benchmark before an Olympic race. And I should have been stressed about it. And I was like, it's not going to happen because that's just how training goes. So I really like Matt Fitzgerald's triathlon training book. I've used that for the last 6 years or so. You want to have some sort of GPS watch or device to track miles, or a phone holder for your bike, and use Strava. Because if you're out on the bike and you don't know how long you've gone, you're going to underestimate it, because biking long distances feels like forever. So have something, even if it's not a fancy GPS watch, have something that can track your miles. And I always, always, always lose count in the pool. So some people use like little paper clips on the lane to keep track. That I can't do that.
Oh, like for how many laps that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like really fine tooth. I don't think I'd be able to do that either.
That's too much for me. Yeah. I always lose count, especially when you're doing like a big chunk. Like if you think I'm going to swim 1,000 straight, I definitely have to have my watch to check. So if that's something you can splurge on, I would say have some kind of counter. A few cycling jerseys to practice reaching back to grab fuel that's in your back pocket. And then along with that, padded bike shorts. And of course, you know I'm going to say this, water bottles for your bike and handhelds. And if you can, if your bike only has one bottle cage, at least have two. And then if you are going long, if you're going to do over a sprint, I would suggest a bento box for your bike.
Is that exactly what it sounds like? Like a food thing?
Okay. It's just to hold food and fuel. And it goes right underneath you, like right where the stem is. So it's really easy to get to. Swim or a wet bag for your wet and sweaty clothes. Oh my gosh, I can't tell you how many of those I use. Like you don't think about that until you have a really sopping wet swimsuit or really soggy sports bra from your run, from your midday run.
Yeah. Are you having to do, on that note, are you doing laundry every day? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Because you're not going to want a wet swimsuit just sitting around getting mildew or anything like that.
Exactly, which is why I said to get two if you can. Mm-hmm. I'm really bad about washing swimsuits. I know that's probably not good, but yeah, I think just because you're in it so often, it's like, oh, chlorine, whatever. But I mean,
yeah, that's true. It's like I got to do this again in 2 days.
Exactly. And you want to have moisture wicking socks and hat or visor. So those are the things you absolutely have to have. And then what you don't necessarily need but would be super helpful, a triathlon bike or aero bars for your road bike. That's what I have. I don't have a triathlon bike. I'm probably going to ask for one for my 35th birthday. I have aero bars on my road bike, which is kind of a faux pas. Some people will definitely look down on you, but I don't care. Triathlon bikes are really expensive. It's an investment. I would only get that if you know you absolutely love triathlon and you're going to do at least half Ironman. Don't commit to that until you know. So get a road bike if you want, get aero bars on it. That's what I did. Clipless pedals along with cycling shoes. Very scary at first. I remember I got them like a week before I did a race. And I remember telling the bike guy, like, am I going to fall? And he's like, yes, but that's okay. And I'm like, great. And I've fallen like, I don't know, 2 or 3 times in my clipless pedals in the 8 years I've had them. So not terrible, but they do make you faster. You just feel more in sync with your bike. And then you'll need cycling shoes for that. Biking gloves are really helpful for sweaty hands. I don't know about you guys, but I get really sweaty hands. And then that can make you feel kind of unsafe on the bike when you're trying to hold on to your handlebars. A good comfortable seat. You're going to be on that bike for a long time. If it's uncomfortable, you're going to hate every second. So, and it does take you some braking in time to get used to that. Then that's why you have those padded shorts. But you don't wear super padded shorts for the triathlon race. So keep that in mind.
Okay, so that's just training.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a seat cover too, correct? Or is that optional?
That's optional. You have a little bit of a pad for your triathlon suit or two-piece, but it's nothing like traditional biking shorts. Yeah, that's a lot more padded. I don't know. I would kind of say that this is unnecessary, but I know it's not doable for everybody, but a master swim class, or at least have a swim coach check out your form and give you tips.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine if someone's doing a triathlon and they know nothing about swimming, they're going to educate themselves a little bit.
Right. Watch some YouTube videos. There's good stuff out there. That's helpful too. A wetsuit, or now they have a lot of like borrow rent ones that you can do for the day for your race. But I would say like to at least get one swim in it if you're going to rent it or borrow it before the race and know how to take it on and put it off, take it off. I have a Roka one that I really love and I recommend. A hydration straw system for staying in aero on the bike. It's essentially just your fuel, your sports drink in one big container, and then it is a straw, so you just sip from it. It's so easy, and it keeps you hydrated for sure because you don't have to get up, grab your water bottle, sip it, put it back in, touch your handlebars. Sunglasses made for cycling and running. I will say that I wore like ridiculously huge sunglasses for probably the first 5 years of triathlon, and my friends totally made fun of me, but I'm like, well, it's good because all my sunscreen comes off. But it does help to have polarization and just something made for cycling and running. Two pairs of goggles, one dark and one light for different race environments. I also would train with dark goggles when I was like first starting to train because the water looks dark and that's what you're going to see in your race. So that made me more comfortable with that. It didn't freak me out. So that was one tip that I found really helped, but it does help to have a light pair also. But let's say it's like a cloudy day on your race. You don't necessarily want to have dark goggles also, because then you're really not going to be able to see.
Things I never would have thought of.
I know, so much. A trainer. I love my trainer. I use it all the time. We've talked about this. Like, I use it with the Peloton app. I have a Cyclops one that I got used. It was like $100 and it still works fine. And I do recommend having some sort of bike program, either Peloton, Zwift is good. I know Megan Featherston talked about that. Just to keep you motivated and keep you engaged, it will make you a faster biker, 100%. A treadmill, especially if you're like, I'm not running when it's 105 degrees outside or your kid's napping and this is the only time you can fit in your run for the day. A treadmill is definitely a huge splurge, but really awesome if you know that you're committed to a triathlon. Join a biking group or look up local cycling stores for group rides, but just know that most don't let you ride your triathlon bike during group rides because you're in aero, your brakes are not always right there, you're not as safe, you can't react as quickly. So a lot of biking groups won't let you ride those, only road bikes. Invest in some shave cream or Vaseline, you're gonna need it. Quick lace triathlon shoe ties, so it's essentially just takes away the tying part, it's like a little zip tie. And then do a bike race or two to get comfortable riding in bigger groups. So just biking, no swimming, no running, just so then you get used to hanging off with other people and maybe you'll experience a flat and you know how to change that and you don't have to wait for the sag wagon.
Yeah, those are all good tips. Oh, a flat. Maybe we could talk about that in our logistics episode.
Yes. Yes. Good plan.
I never would have thought of that either. Wow, Marita. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that experience. I am very intimidated by the idea of a triathlon, but this definitely helps to think about all of the different pieces and how you manage training, what that schedule looked like. I know you have a lot more information to share, like how you fueled, which I'm also especially excited to hear about. What we're going to do is we're going to break this episode into two since we're already getting kind of long. And next week, we're going to save the logistics, the fueling, and Marita's best tips. And we've gotten a few questions from listeners too, so we'll kind of do a Q&A as well.
Sounds good. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you have questions about triathlon training for a longer course like ultra endurance, let us know. We are actually going to be talking with an ultra endurance athlete in a couple weeks. Or if you have any other nutrition, training, fueling questions, hit us up at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com.
Don't forget to leave us a review if you're enjoying this podcast. It means the world to us, and it is a free way to support the show.
Thanks, friends. That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!